I had a couple people ask me to record this, so I'm going to put that right there. Welcome to BCM. I don't see any, like, new folks, so I'm not going to tell you about BCM. I think you guys all have the idea that if you don't like what I'm saying today, it's no big deal because I won't be saying it next week. Somebody else will say something. I have titled my thoughts for this morning, Don't Mess Up the Paint Job. Don't mess up the paint job. Obviously, that means you made a bit of a mistake coming. Because of all the places you could be, you're going to be sitting listening to a house painter. I've been painting for about 36 years, which is way too many when you're only 48 years old. But if you came here this morning looking for proof of God, well, here's 36 years of painting, and my liver is still intact. So miracles really do happen. But what else should a painter talk about than what he knows? And what does a painter know? Alcohol. No. Come on. Be fair. I know painting. Most painters know painting if you're lucky. There are three things that can really cause complications with your paint job if you hire a painter. And I want to talk about those this morning because I think they might have something to teach us about shaping our life after Jesus. So those three things are, one, when a client thinks they know everything. Two, add-ons. And three, forcing projects. So those are the three things that I'm going to talk about this morning and how they might pertain to a life that's trying to shape itself after Jesus. There's this forcing the project. Yeah. There's a scripture that we can consider throughout this talk. It comes from the book of Micah. It's pretty familiar probably to most folks. It says, "He has shown you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God." I like to think of this scripture as one of the original versions of the idea of keep it simple, stupid. And so you can keep that kind of in the back of your head as we go through this morning. And in the interest of being humble and loving mercy and all those sorts of things, maybe we can hold those in the back of our minds throughout the talk and as we pass the peace right now. So may the peace of the Lord be with you. Okay, so it's like, what am I thinking having you guys pass the peace? I just had to like wrangle y'all in before we got started, and here we go again, but it's like Pandora's box. Okay, so here we go. You guys remember those things called clocks? There's one up there. Those were instruments we used to use to tell time. And for those of you not real familiar with clocks, there typically were two hands on a clock, right? They're most often the whitest hand told the hour, and a skinnier hand, quite a bit skinnier, would tell the minute. And every once in a while, there was a clock that had a second hand that was even skinnier than the minute hand, right? And this is how we used to tell time. Now, hold that in your head for a second. I know a lot about painting. I've been doing it for 36 years, right? I'd venture to say that I know probably more than just about anybody else. It may sound like I'm bragging, but we're talking about painting here, so yeah. But having said that, the average person basically knows almost nothing about painting. If you picture a clock, the average person at best might know a minute's hand's worth of the face of the clock of painting, right? Most likely they actually know more like a second's hand. And so that's just how it is, right? But if you have a client who thinks they know everything about painting, or even more than the average person, it could be problematic because no matter who they are, even if they're a painter, or were a painter, that is, they still only know about a minute's width at best of the whole face of the clock. Now, if you just think about this for a minute, you could probably imagine all the manner of complications and problems, relational conflicts, wasted time, schedule hiccups, unnecessary conversations, frustrations, etc., 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 that arise when a client who at best knows the sliver of a minute hand of the face of the clock thinks they know the whole area of the clock. It's really rough working with these folks. They're convinced that the minute hand is the whole face of the clock. And to top it off, most likely they've got misinformation in their minute hand. So you can imagine what that might do. And if we take that image from the painting world and let's widen the lens a bit, we could think of the wide scale of the universe, say. And the whole of human knowledge and expertise, I think, can be represented by the second hand on the face of the clock. Have you ever, we got so many stars here in Breckenridge, you know, when it's dark out and there's no moon, there's a lot of moon right now. Have you ever looked at the stars, like really considered them? Because if you have, for me, sometimes I try to make a habit every night, and sometimes I look and it's terrifying. It's beautiful, but it's terrifying. And if you haven't experienced that, maybe go look at the stars with that in mind one of these nights. Again, the whole of human knowledge, I believe, all of history, politics, science, religion, every person who's ever lived, the best of that knowledge is the sliver of a second hand on the face of all of reality. You may think you know a lot about painting, but you don't. And the universe, just look at the stars. I looked it up the other day. In the observable universe, there are 200 billion trillion stars, give or take a few. And all of us on this blue planet circle one. We circle just one. So I want to bring that back to Jesus. You ever notice how Jesus answers almost every question he's asked? Have you ever noticed? There's kind of three ways it seems he does it. He often answers questions by asking different questions. He often just changes the subject. Or he often exposes the folly of the questioner's assumptions. Those are three things he often does. And I ask myself why, and I think it's because all the people asking him think they have the big piece of the face of the clock all wrapped up. And their questions come from their supposed knowledge, but at best, they only know the sliver of a second hand, at best. And I'd venture to say not much has changed in our day. And just like in painting, the problems this causes are legion. So, that's the number one lesson from painting. The first lesson, what messes up a paint job when a client thinks they know everything? Number two is add-ons. Add-ons are nothing but complications and problems. So if you're not familiar, an add-on is when somebody adds something to a painter's recommendations or to the original scope of a project in general. And the issue with add-ons is that they severely get in the way. Because painting is a process. It's like a journey, so to speak. And no two paint jobs are the same. There's some guidelines, yes, and there are some skills that need to be followed and had, but both guidelines and skills need to be flexible for every specific paint job. Every job requires its own process and journey, and a great painter knows how to use the rules, how to bend the rules, and when to completely break the rules, in order to get the best end, right? But add-ons, they interrupt, they distort, they hinder, and they get in the way of that journey. They're expensive. If you want to pay a lot for a paint job, just start doing add-ons, right? They're painful, they're expensive, they're time-consuming, and they cause things to be done in a less than desirable order. They are decisions that are made almost every time when somebody's lost in the woods, right? They can't see the forest for the trees. The end result is introduced chaos, unnecessary pain, lost time, more cost, lesser quality, and most often they have no benefit for the end result, but plenty of detriment in spite of their intentions for the opposite. So, I'm going to bring it back to Jesus. Add-ons in life were one of his least favorite things. It's one of the big reasons he was always butting heads with the religious leaders of his day. They were always adding on more and more. And the results of their add-ons were the same as they are on a paint job. Again, I don't think anything's really changed in our day and age. There are so many add-ons to Jesus' teachings these days that people can claim to follow him and at the same time treat others with utter spite and venom if those others think differently or if they might feel like they're a threat. And that, my friends, is a paint job full of add-ons. So, first and second of the painter-infused lessons in following Jesus, it's trouble when a client thinks they know everything and add-ons completely lose the way, right? So we've got a third thing to consider today, which is how forcing a painting project is utterly detrimental to the end result. I can't tell you how many times clients have said things like, we need this job done by Christmas, Thanksgiving, my kid's birthday, Flag Day. Yes. In our scenario here in Breckenridge, 99% of the time, the house being worked on is a second home, maybe a third or a fourth home. And look at that. That's the nature of where we live, right? But needless to say, when somebody says, I need this done by, it's very hard for me to keep a straight face because they have other options, right? Another common one is, well, we've scheduled the movers for so-and-so a date, and it needs to be done by then. Like a word to the wise, consult your painter first before scheduling the movers. Because a made-up deadline based on a second-hand's width of knowledge concerning painting is akin to telling your two-year-old that they should be able to tie their shoes. Not that I ever did that. But the point is, there are steps and there are processes that have to occur and that take a certain amount of time, no matter how you press them. Putting a deadline on the end result without allowing for these processes sacrifices quality, sacrifices care, cleanliness, longevity, and plenty more. Not to mention, it doesn't allow for the common realities that come up, like surprises, hiccups, unexpected difficulties, etc., that might present themselves. One small example here in Breckenridge, you could be painting inside, but if it's 0 degrees outside, the paint will take hours and hours longer to dry, no matter what, on an exterior wall, right? So go ahead and make your deadline that you think you need, and then there's nothing that can be done about it, and then what happens at the end, right? So that's just one small example. For the record, my company, given the true opportunity, we tell people a schedule, and 99% of the time, we finish ahead of that schedule. But we know what we're doing. We know what the schedule should be, right? But that actually doesn't matter at all if the client has already pressed the deadline that has nothing to do with anything. So bringing this back to Jesus, have you ever noticed how he gives no deadlines and he forces no ends? He's patient for the necessary processes of every individual scenario. He doesn't give any formulas and he forces no ultimatum. I would venture to say in most religious circles, you'll find that all we have is formulas and forced ultimatums. But that's not how Jesus worked. If you really look at his life, every scenario, every means, every journey is patiently trusted in the hands of God, and it's fashioned for the unique heart that's standing in front of him. Think of the rich young ruler. Totally different scenario is given to him than to give to Zacchaeus. If you look at them hand in hand, they conflict, right? But it's because we're talking about individuals here, and that's how Jesus approaches people. Look at the woman at the well, look at a blind man seeking sight, or the disciple John, or Peter, or Thomas. It's all completely different, their journeys. The list goes on, and the point is, nothing gets pressed. Each person is given their individual and personal space to get their individual, purposeful, best result. Each is given different things to do or consider. And each result is also unique. And each result's really never finished, right? And in each case, it may not actually turn out like I think it should with my sliver second-hand knowledge, right? So there you have it. Obviously, this is a metaphor, and the metaphor breaks down pretty quick when you realize the humble painter is the face of the clock. But just find your own metaphor, right? Find what works for you. Take it or leave it. But really, find what works for you, because that's how Jesus approached others, is by what worked for them. He didn't approach others with like a method and then force them into it. Everything was completely individual. And what I really hope you could take from my thoughts today in your everyday experiences, don't be the person who thinks they know more than they do. If nothing else, remember that you don't even know what you don't know. 2, don't add on. Jesus hated this because it was a way to avoid who we truly are. Almost every add-on is like a way to make yourself seem or feel like you're on top of it. But it just messes everything up. 3, don't force an end, because faith is the complete opposite of that. And our journey is one of faith. So what I'm really trying to say is, don't mess up the paint job. That's all I got this morning.